Zeba Norman, the Transatlantic Institute, London, 13 May 2006. 1 year ago today in Andijan, in the northeastern part of Uzbekistan, where the country wedges like a spade into Kyrgyzstan, sitting both above and below it, Islam Karimov's government fired on hundreds of unarmed demonstrators. They were protesting against the regime's repressive policies and in solidarity with a group of businessmen who'd been in prison on charges of being part of Islamic extremist groups. Official reports say under 200 were killed, though NGOs working in the area say the number is perhaps fivefold higher than admitted by Uzbek government sources. Although the reports from independent media witnesses suggest there were no religious overtones to the demonstrations, no chanting of Allahu Akbar or similar, the government of Uzbekistan has consistently insisted the demonstrations were orchestrated by extremist forces working there. This is largely the line taken by the Kremlin and Russian press, with China and Russia backing Karimov's actions as, quote, a necessary use of force to fight terrorism and separatism. Karimov has refused to allow an independent inquiry into the events of the 13th of May massacre, and since then, the repressive tendencies have grown stronger, with NGOs being kicked out. Even UNHCR have left as of 17 April. Over the past year, some 170 people have been sent to prison after show trial-like proceedings. The Karimov regime have played the Islam card in the past, using this as a justification for cracking down on opposition groups and dragging their heels in respect of democratic reform. Prior to the events of last May, things were getting worse in Uzbekistan. After terrorist attacks in spring of 2004, much of the progress that was being made towards reform was halted. At roughly the same time, relations with the U.S., which hitherto had been growing warmer, started to change. Uzbekistan was, of course, one of the countries which supported military action in Afghanistan and Iraq. Until August 2005, it housed the K-2 American Air Base and was pivotal for military operations in the region. After the events in Andijan, the U.S. was given contractual notice to vacate these bases. Karimov believed the U.S. presence to be corrosive and bore significant responsibility for unrest. So how have these developments affected the region, and what is the prognosis for the future? The U.S. has suspended financial aid and imposed visa restrictions on members of the Karimov elite. Though these gestures are to be encouraged, they are not likely to make any appreciable dent in Karimov's stranglehold on power. As Uzbekistan turns away from Washington, it is looking increasingly towards Moscow, and it has been welcomed with open arms by Putin, who sees this as another opportunity to rebuild alliances of old that are important strategically and economically. Russia's concern for her internal security is also a factor, with Moscow preferring the status quo to unpredictable changes that she believes may strengthen extremist and nationalist forces that pose a threat. Russia is doing herself no favors if she does not support a movement towards more democratic reforms of government in these regions. Attempts to keep the lid tightly clamped on these societies and supporting governments like Karimov's may postpone the progression of events, but when confrontation does erupt, it is likely that they will be far more violent and unpredictable. Democratic and free market economic forces are what is needed to underpin the establishment and stability of these societies, though Moscow, despite now being in a position to influence events, looks in no mood to support much-needed reform. In Uzbekistan and elsewhere in the region, failure to address these questions leaves a dangerous opening for extremist forces. Authoritarian clampdowns of the type that resulted in the massacre in Andijan will only serve to strengthen the rise of fundamentalism, so feared by both Moscow and Beijing, and will not make Central Asia any safer.